I have been looking forward to this segment all week. As I said, I just binged listened to a podcast that just blew my mind away. I've been a lawyer for almost 40 years. I've reported on crime of all topics and all types and all kinds of human misery in this world. But this one is something that I never even thought of. I am going to introduce our next guest. He is Julian Morgans. He's a podcaster and a journalist. Write it down. It's called Scammerland, a podcast that's widely available, written, hosted, and produced by my next guest, who's joining us from Melbourne, Australia. Julian, thank you so much for joining me.
Hello. Hello, Karen.
Hi. So great to hear your voice.
Well, I hope so. Look, if it sounds like I've got a cold, it's because I've got a bit of a cold.
But, oh.
Thanks for having me.
No, you could have just said it was we have a bad connection because we're like 20 hours away, so it doesn't matter. But I'm just so excited to have you on. I'm going to let you tell our listeners about this phenomena that's going on in Southeast Asia, maybe other places, and what this podcast is about.
Okay, sure. So, I mean, we all know about scams. Like, scams show up in our inboxes, they show up on our phones, and the reality is that most of the scams that we're receiving in the West, they're not being run by individuals. You know, we think that they're being run by sort of shady individuals out of Russia or something. And that's just no longer the case. This scamming industry has become highly streamlined, highly industrialized, and scams are being run out of these high security compounds through Southeast Asia, where people are being held in slavery, basically, and being forced to run these scams that us in the West are receiving in our inboxes and on our phones.
So in your podcast, you interview a couple of different people who got involved, and you know, I don't want to give too much away because I want people to listen to this podcast, Scammerland. Tell our listeners how do people get hooked up into this? How in the world do you get people from different countries who go to Southeast Asia and then get basically incarcerated into the slave trade?
Yeah, they're lied to, basically. So recruiters for these businesses are basically targeting Africans, Central Asians, Eastern Europeans, going to these places and saying, hey, we know that there's not many job opportunities here. Get on a plane, come with us, come to Thailand, and we'll hook you up with a great job. You know, you can get into data entry for a supermarket or maybe, you know, like they're offering legitimate sounding employment opportunities in places where there aren't many jobs. So these people, like the guy that I spoke to from Uganda, he jumped at this opportunity. And so he actually sold up everything that he owned and got on a plane, went to Thailand, where he quickly became a victim of human trafficking. So yeah, it's a pretty sad situation on every level.
Yeah, I mean, your heart goes out to this guy. I mean, because he left his family, he left everything, and he just wanted a better life. And instead, he was tortured. And, you know, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Julian, can you put into perspective how large a business is this? Like, you know, we don't know for sure, but what are we thinking about as far as the number of people involved and the number of dollars that are generated from these things?
Okay, so these have been run like modern corporations. I mean, we're talking about sort of tech, Silicon Valley tech-sized companies here. So just in Southeast Asia alone, and when I say Southeast Asia, I'm referring to Myanmar, Cambodia, and Laos. We're looking at over $60 billion a year, which is about the size of like a U.S. oil company. And they sort of operate like large Silicon Valley corporations as well. You know, they're innovative. They're implementing AI into their processes. They're very quick to react when certain scams stop working. They're just very nimble, and they seem to be run by incredibly smart, savvy business people. I mean, from what we know, it seems like the people on the top are basically organized crime in China, a bit of Taiwan as well. So, you know, they've got money, they've got resources, and they've built this this array of, we're calling them farms, like factory farms, but for human beings.
And it's a, I mean, I've seen pictures. They are buildings, tall buildings and gates and you know, they're like little cities, right? I mean, there's the whole world. They're like their own little microcosm of the world. Can you explain what some of these scams are? I mean, we've probably seen, like you said, on our computers, on our phones. But tell us, like, give us a couple examples of what these scammers do and how they're successful.
Okay. Well, Karen, I'm pretty sure that you would have seen some of these scams. These are not sort of like exotic scams. These are very garden variety scams. The most common is, have you ever received a text message from someone you don't know, and they're kind of like fishing for a conversation? They're just like, hey, what's your name? Or, hey, do I know you? Or something, just sort of like an opener like that. These people are using WhatsApp a lot as well. Also Signal. They're also all over Facebook. Facebook Marketplace seems to be particularly riddled with these kind of scams. So these are what's known as pig butchering scams. Primarily, they're trying to lure people in through the pretense of a relationship. So if you start talking to them, they'll say, "Hey, you know, I'm an attractive young woman or an attractive young man, and hey, I like your style, and we should talk." And these scams just happen to land in people's lives at a moment when they're vulnerable. And it's the vulnerability that makes them susceptible. Vulnerable in the sense of that these scammers, they're playing a numbers game. And if you send out enough scams, eventually you're just going to land these scams in people's lives at a time when maybe they've lost their jobs, or maybe they've just gone through a divorce, or for a range of reasons. They've got their guard down, and they'll respond to these fraudulent text messages or WhatsApp messages, and that's how they get the hook in.
And, you know, I have to say this, that, you know, you have a guest on your podcast who seems like an educated guy, and, you know, he was maybe a little down on his luck, but didn't sound to me like a person who would fall for any of this, but he certainly did. And he described how the trust, he got the trust of this person he was corresponding with, whom he thought was a woman, and they bilked him out of a bunch of money. And, you know, I guess I just want to remind listeners that, you know, anyone could fall for this. It's not just super vulnerable people who are ignorant about these things. And that's why I always tell you, if you have an elderly neighbor or a family member who's online, you know, to really warn them about these things, because maybe they aren't as sophisticated as you are about these sort of scams. And Julian, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think I just wanted to make the point as well that, you know, each of us have our own sort of private dreams and aspirations. You know, we all like to believe that the dream job offer could sort of land in our inboxes, or maybe that we could meet our dream partner. Somewhere in the back of our minds, we all believe this stuff. And so if a message like this lands in your life at a time when maybe for a range of reasons, you've got your guard down, Then they just sort of manipulate this human desire to aspire, and I think that's one of the things that's really quite horrible about it as well.
Absolutely, you take something that's good, that hope, that optimism, the striving for something better in your life, and instead of getting it, you get the opposite. I'm going to take a break now, but Scammerland is the podcast, and this is Julian Morgans, who is the writer, and he hosts the show. Can you just tell our listeners where they can listen to Scammerland?
Sure can. So Scammerland is a 6-part deep dive into this topic, and it's available on Apple Podcasts or YouTube or Spotify. If you actually want to watch the video version, you can check it out on YouTube or on Spotify.
We are talking to Julian Morgans, who is a podcaster and a journalist, and we're talking about Scammerland, which is a fabulous podcast. $60 billion a year are being made on scams, mostly in Southeast Asia. Julian, I just want to make sure you're still there. Hi, Julian, you still there?
Hey, Karen.
Hi. I'm still here. Okay, great. So let's talk a little bit about the sophisticated technology that is being used. I assume that if you're being led to believe that you're talking to a beautiful woman, there are pictures and all kinds of things that get sent in AI-generated things. I mean, it's high tech, is it not?
It's very high tech. I think this is one of the sort of the darkest, most aspects of this story. So the AI is getting implemented at a few levels. So, for example, if you apply for one of these jobs, or if you get kind of caught up in this recruitment funnel, you will probably do an interview with these people who you're told they will be your bosses in Thailand. And the people that you're looking at on your screen, they'll be moving like regular people. Their faces, their body language will all be very believable. But these people don't exist. You know, you're basically talking to AI-generated images, believing. I've spoke to a young woman from Morocco who was recruited to run scams, and she saw and she did several of these online interviews. And then when she actually got to the scammer farm, she talked about how these rooms and these people that interviewed her, she never saw them. They didn't seem to exist at the compound. And it seems as though they're all AI-generated. And then there's the other level, where if you're a potential victim, if they're trying to scam you, then let's say they're pretending to be, hey, I'm a sort of sexy Eastern European lady, then you'll pull up a video, you know, maybe you're FaceTiming this seemingly European looking woman who, again, you're looking actually at an AI generated image. You might be talking, you're probably talking to a woman who's held in slavery somewhere in one of these compounds. But her face has been completely digitally altered and is moving in a very convincing way in live time. So they're sort of implementing AI to basically fool people at every step of the way.
Let's talk a little bit about the conditions in these camps, or whatever you want to call them, these compounds. You interview some people about the conditions, but I'm sure that, you know, having interviewed a lot of people about this, you kind of have a feel for what it's like. Can you take us inside one of these compounds and tell our listeners about what the life is for somebody who's being forced to work in this online scam enterprise?
Yeah, sure. So look, at its best, even if you manage to stay out of trouble, you're looking at sort of like 20-hour work days. Most of the people that I spoke to weren't getting more than about 3 or 4 hours sleep every night before they were pulled out of bed to go back to the computer rooms to work again. So that's at its best. Also, the food you're receiving is atrocious. The guy that I spoke to from Uganda was basically being fed a diet of scraps. After the Chinese business owners had eaten their meals, they'd feed the sort of the African group their scraps, which sort of has a sort of stink of racism about it as well. So that's kind of just like your base level, you know, if it's going fairly well. But then on top of that, they've just got torture baked into their business model. So if you don't hit your quota of people that you need to scam every day, you'll get tasered. Tasering is the most common form of punishment. All of the sort of the team leaders and business management guys, they've all got tasers. If you've really messed up, then you get taken to something called the dark room. It can also be called the black room, depending on the compound.
Julian, let's play a segment from your podcast. I think this would be a good time. There is a gentleman named Small Q who was being interviewed about the dark room. He was being punished, and this is a segment from it.
The dark room, also sometimes known as the black room. Every scammer farm has at least one, and they're not called dark rooms because they're actually dark. The name just refers to a mental state that these rooms create.
It's the most bad place on earth. This is a place I stopped thinking. This is a place I felt like I should die. So they hanged us up on some metal hooks. Imagine on handcuffs, holding your own weight.
Oh, so you're suspended off the ground.
Yeah, man.
Are your feet touching the ground?
Nope. And at a certain point, you use, you know, to try to touch the ground so that you don't feel that pain. But these guys made it intentional so that we don't touch the ground. Then we were not allowed to eat or drink for all the time we spent in there. We were not allowed to use, you know, washrooms. So each and everything you had to do it there on yourself. This is so emotional, because when I remember this stuff, man, it's like I felt like not even just a slave. I felt like, God, what have I done, you know, to pass in this kind of situation, bro?
And this is just heartbreaking when you hear him. And there's more here, and you know, and I encourage you to listen to it. Julian, you sort of allude to the idea that the people who are running these places are a little bit sadistic and kind of revel in some of the torture. And, you know, it can be sexual in nature in some cases. It's obviously mind games and this horrific physical torture. Did you get the sense that it was sadistic?
Yeah, it's definitely sadistic. Look, I don't know why, but if I had to guess, I would say that particularly in Myanmar. I mean, Myanmar is a country in Southeast Asia which is sort of on the verge of becoming a failed state. It's a series of it's run by a series of juntas. It's been in a state of civil war for decades, and these are really like war hardened. A lot of them are just kind of criminals. You know, these are people with a lot of power. They're running. They're in cahoots with the Chinese operators of these farms. They're basically the landlords, so they're getting paid off. And these guys, they've just grown up in a real culture of violence for decades, where to them, if you want to get on top, if you want to climb some sort of ladder, then the way you do that is through violence and apparently sadism. Yeah.
And, you know, the torture that you talk about here are, you know, it's just it has to just completely affect this guy for the rest of his life. I mean, you met a small Q. He spoiler alert, he did escape. Otherwise, he wouldn't be talking to you in your podcast. But, you know, did you sense that he had some just long-lasting effects from all of this mental and physical torture? Or was he so happy to get out that he just was, you know, happy to be alive?
Yeah, look, a bit of both. I mean, Small Q spent about 5 days suspended from his wrists by handcuffs that were hooked to a wall. And he said that he's lost a lot of the sensation in some of his fingers just from that experience. Everyone that I've spoken to, and I think I've spoken to three or four survivors from these compounds, they've all got varying forms of PTSD, and that comes out in all sorts of different ways. I mean, all of them broke down at certain parts of the interview. There was always a lot of crying. We'd have to take a rest before we go on to cover certain parts of the story. But they're also incredibly strong. Q is now, he's a musician, he's a gospel singer, he's a rapper, and he's dedicated his life to communicating to other Ugandans the dangers of traveling to Southeast Asia for dream jobs, and he's doing that through his music. So, yeah, my hat goes off to him.
When we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit about getting these people out and what the plans are to get these people out. It just seems like, why can't someone come in with a helicopter and, you know, do something to get all these people out of these compounds? But, you know, is there some idea that the governments here are protecting these scammer farms and maybe making money on it, and so therefore they don't want to end it? Is there that thought, Julian, having been close to this topic?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. These are countries where they've been struggling. They've been sort of subsistence farmers for generations, and now they've finally got a business model that's generating them billions of dollars. And the government is very much involved, particularly in Cambodia and Myanmar. I mean, these areas, they're kind of like experiencing like an oil boom, except their cottage industry is scamming. So yes, the government's responsible.
Let's tell our listeners a little bit about the podcast, just wrapping up, you know, just so we know what we're talking about when we go into the next hour. Julian Morgans has a podcast called Scammerland. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about it and where they can listen to it?
Sure, yeah. So Scammerland is a 6-part deep dive into how scams are all being run by people living in slavery. That's Scammerland. You can listen to it on Apple. You can listen to it on YouTube. And you can listen to it on Spotify.
And before we take a break, I know that you have another podcast that I have not listened to yet, but I'm going to. It's on my list. It's called What It Was Like. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Yes, I can. This is very nice of you, Karen. You're just providing me with lots of very generous advertising space for my various podcasts.
You know, you're doing me a favor because I my attention span during the weekends is pretty short because I work a lot. So when the fact that I couldn't put this down, you know, really, it made a real difference in my life to listen to this and hear this horrible story that nobody knows about. So thank you for being on. But go ahead, tell us about the what it was like.
Yeah, not a problem. So what it was like is weekly show. So every week I ask someone who's lived through an extreme event what it was like. So we talk to all sorts of people who maybe their family members were serial killers, or people who they themselves have committed white-collar crime, or people, we spoke to a woman a few weeks ago who dated a celebrity. She wasn't famous herself. Just all sorts of really interesting human stories. And that's what it was like.
So tune into that one, too, after you're done with Scammerland. When we come back, we're going to wrap up and talk a little bit about maybe the brighter side of this is that how some people can escape and maybe what efforts are being made to help these people who are living in this horrible situation. We're talking to Julian Morgans. He's a podcaster and a journalist, and we're talking about his podcast Scammerland, which is a must deep dive, six episodes, a deep dive into this issue of 400,000 people living in slavery, being forced to run scams across the country. Julian, is this going on, you say, mostly in Southeast Asia? I had a texter who said that it used to go on in the Philippines, but people started rounding them up and getting rid of them. Is that the case? Do you know about that?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it's sort of one of the pioneering kind of countries for this business model was the Philippines, but they've got a bit more of a stable government, I'm happy to say. So the government eventually decided it was not a good look for them. So sort of closed down a lot of these places. They called it Pogo, P-O-G-O, and they shut down these places, and the operators moved to less stable countries like Laos and Cambodia and Myanmar. But to answer your question, no, it's not. To my knowledge, it's not happening in places like the U.S. Human trafficking is illegal. Our law enforcement community wouldn't stand for it, which is why these people operate out of places like Myanmar, where they can just pay off the local junta, and then they're pretty much given free rein to run these businesses however they want.
I assume that in addition to the torture that goes on here, there's murder, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of murder. So one of the guests I had on the show, Small Q, who's the rapper that I was talking about before, he told me that he'd often to show up to work. You know, everyone's got their little like cubicle. It sort of looks a bit like an office. You show up to work in the morning and you've got this computer and a little cubicle. And he told me that all the time, people would just disappear. The guy next to him would just not be there, and there'd be some other total stranger there. Or, you know, he'd go back to his bunk at night, and the person above him would just be gone. And he told me that most of the time, these people were just tortured to death or deliberately murdered, and then their bodies were dumped in the local river.
And when people disappear and they go to the Southeast Asia and they get caught up in these camps, what, you know, would their families just have no idea where they are, right? And they have no way to communicate with them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, even their embassies, you know, so again, with Small Q, the Ugandan embassy was aware that a whole bunch of Ugandans had disappeared in Thailand, and they'd probably been kidnapped and taken to Myanmar. But it's kind of like, well, what do you do? And like, which specific scammer farm? There's dozens of these compounds through Myanmar. So it's also, there's a difficulty in targeting which specific compound to try to find which specific victim.
One of your guests is a true humanitarian who talked about his efforts to get people out of these camps. And I don't want to spoiler alert on small Q, you know, on how he got out, because it's such a dramatic story. And it is so wonderful that he's out. But tell us about the efforts and how he works to get these people out.
Yeah, so Judah Tanner, really, thank you, Judah, if you're listening to this somehow, he made this whole podcast possible. He really walked me through what's happening, and he connected me with various survivors. So Judah is actually an Australian guy. He's like me. He moved to Thailand just over the border from Myanmar about 20 years ago, and he set up a non-governmental organization, and he's been basically just doing charity work there for 20 years. And then when these scammer farms came online, he watched as these buildings went up, and he said it was a sort of very mysterious thing. There were these huge, you know, multi-story buildings going up behind big fences, and he and his friends had no idea what this stuff was. They thought that maybe it was casinos, or they didn't know what these buildings were. And then they started getting reports that people were being funneled in as slaves to operate scams. So he basically just decided that he was going to make himself responsible for trying to get people out. And his charity work has shifted dramatically. He used to be all about childhood education, and now he just works on trying to rescue former slaves 24/7, and that's his job. So Judah's an amazing guy, and he was very, very kind to help me out.
Yeah, I mean, he sounded like it. And you know the way that these people get out, I mean, there's diplomacy, there's money being paid, but, you know, it just seems to me that, you know, just rescuing a few people is wonderful. I'd like to see all of them rescued. But, again, I would like to see the United States get involved in this. I mean, even though we maybe don't have a lot of people in those farms, you would think that we would be able to do something diplomatically to try to shame these countries into doing something different, because it's just so horrible, just horrible to think about these people on a daily basis. I'm sure it haunts you. You know, you can't unhear this podcast.
Yeah. And I want to point out that Americans are by and large being targeted by these groups. You know, American victims are being fleeced of billions of dollars every year. The Small Q worked for a company that they specialized in targeting American men over the age of 40 via Facebook and WhatsApp. So that was their target group. That was their entire business model. So America definitely has some skin in the game here, some reasons to want to abolish this.
Very, very, very good point. Thank you so much for joining us. I know it's a whole different day where you are, Julian Morgans. This podcast is called Scammerland. It's available anywhere you get your podcast. Also, What It Was Like, another podcast, which I'm going to tune into, and maybe we'll have you on again. Thank you so much for joining us.